Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Spring is sprung and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody is having a good day to this point. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe with you. Willie D is got television duties for the Predators and Coyotes. Don't forget on the radio side, we are your flagship station. I'll have pregame for you at 12:30. 1:30 puck drop, game two, Predators, Coyotes, Hal Gill, Pete Weber. You'll hear them on the call and everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. But right now, let's talk a little football with Greg McElroy, former quarterback, now with ESPN SEC Network. He is on the line with us. Greg, how you doing?
What's going on, fellas? How are y'all?
Doing fantastic. We're doing better than some college coaches right now that are learning a lot of their star players are opting out. We saw it last week at Virginia Tech with their top cornerback, and today P.J. Fleck learns that his stud receiver is going to opt out and not play in 2020. This is going to be the trend for this upcoming college football season, isn't it?
I think for some, but I wouldn't say for a majority. I think obviously when you take into account what guys' personal situation is, the uncertainty surrounding the season, some guys would just like to have a singular focus, just getting focused for the NFL. But at this point, there's really not a huge number of guys that are opting out, at least that are top tier potential draft picks and guys that could potentially really impact how their team does. So I don't think it's necessarily going to be a mass exodus, but I do expect a decent number of guys to opt out because, one, if they are able to preserve their eligibility, I can understand why guys wouldn't want their careers to potentially end like this. You might see a bunch of seniors opt out and say, hey, I'm going to come back next year when it's a little more normal circumstances and hopefully have the enjoyment of what would be a normal college season. So don't be shocked if more guys opt out, but I wouldn't expect it to have a huge impact on the quality of play that we see scattered throughout the country.
Have you thought about if you were at Alabama, how you would have handled this as a player?
I mean, I would have played. Just because I would have felt obligated to my teammates. I just couldn't imagine. And it's not that these guys are selfish or anything. It's not that at all. It's just I personally, speaking from my experiences, I couldn't imagine my teammates going out there and playing and competing and me not being with them. So I would have major FOMO, and I just wouldn't be able to do it. So, yeah, it'd be less than ideal. But it'd be less than ideal for all of us that are in it together. And that would be the way I'd probably approach it. And knowing, you know, what we know about the virus, yeah, it can be problematic for sure. Even for people that are under the age of 25. But all in all, like my biggest concern, if I were 21 years old, my biggest concern would be infecting my parents or infecting my grandparents. And I know that if we were in a controlled setting and we were in kind of a bubble-like atmosphere on campus, I wouldn't have a problem playing at all. So I would definitely play, but, you know, it's nothing against those guys that wouldn't. Everyone has to go about it the best way they know how, and that's really the only way to support each other in this regard.
Because you walked in those shoes and you know the lay of the land and you understand how it feels to be a student athlete and what it takes to pull off what you did, especially at a high level, and the focus that's on you when you play at Alabama. But around the league, around the country, I should say, we're in a different era. I mean, things are turning. Like, there's more. These student athletes are now realizing they have more power than they thought. We're seeing a lot of, you know, coaches being held responsible for their actions, whether it's words or stuff that is said. And I've said this many times on the show, Greg. I know that even 5 years ago, a decade, all the years that I've been on the air and talking about this, you would never see players come out and say that. Of course, you know, now we've got social media. They've got the platform. I think that the things are turning in their favor, and they're going to get some things down the road that will help them moving forward. It may not benefit the ones right now today, but down the road it will help student-athletes get more benefits. How do you feel about that? How did you feel about it when you played? Now that you're away from it, how do you feel about it? Do they deserve what they're asking for? What are your thoughts on that front?
Well, I'm all for improving a player experience. Like, most of the time, y'all, I'm going to go with the player's side. I mean, that's just the way that's the way I see it. That's the way I lived it. I, for one, came from an affluent background, so I wouldn't necessarily be too worried about making a couple extra bucks on the side. Like, I was very fortunate to not have to worry as much about that. But, you know, my situation is different than a lot of my teammates. And if they were to give us the opportunity to earn money off of our name, image, and likeness, then by all means. I mean, I think that's perfectly within reason. Where I draw the line, though, is with the Pac-12 player demand saying, well, we want 50% of the revenue. Well, that's not going to happen.
No.
Because I, for one, have always maintained, and I played at Alabama, all right? So Alabama, you know, one of the most storied programs in one of the most storied conferences with a long line of incredible players and lineage and history. And there's one thing I know. I played with Mark Ingram. Mark Ingram was amazing, Heisman Trophy winner. But after Mark Ingram graduated, it's not like they retired the position of running back. Yes, who came the next year? Trent Richardson. And the year after that was Eddie Lacy. And the year after that was Derrick Henry and TJ Yeldon. And all these other guys that have since come after, Josh Jacobs. I mean, the position and the train that are these schools continues to roll. And when Mark Ingram graduated, I didn't see some massive drop in attendance at Alabama because they no longer had their Heisman Trophy winning star player. So with all due respect to the players, what really moves the needle in college football and what makes it so uniquely special is that it's a generational fandom.
Yeah.
Like, when you buy a jersey, it's not necessarily because of the name on the back of the jersey or the number on the jersey itself. It's the colors and the logo on the jersey, and that's really what moves the needle and will continue to. So I don't anticipate, you know, a whole lot changing as far as this revenue share and this revenue splitting. I think it's misguided. But where I would encourage them to continue to press is on the health insurance, which I think is a really, really interesting and thoughtful demand, especially knowing how many guys struggle trying to get to the NFL, maybe not make a team, and then not having health insurance to fall back on. So I think that's a really smart incentive. I don't think 6 years is necessarily going to happen, but I could see two or three. I like the idea of trying to, you know, incentivize minority programs to allow these kids to have a bigger voice. I think that's great, and it's the university and the athletic department get behind that. That's something we can all support. I mean, there's a lot of things that I've liked that's been brought up of late, but I also think there's a lot of things that are a little misguided as well, and frankly, just completely unrealistic.
Well, well said. If they ever do get a union one day, I know they've tried this, you should be the union rep. That was well thought out. I thought that was more than fair. In fact, the insurance thing, I'm with you. I didn't really think about that until that was thrown out, and I do like it. Or maybe it's, you know, we always talk about four, you know, we always throw out the 4 years for college. Maybe it's, you know, somewhere around 4 years. But either way,
maybe
I think
two,
you're right.
Maybe it's three. I mean,
yeah,
but think about
something.
How many guys, and I had a million teammates that didn't make it in the league.
Yeah.
And they don't have health insurance. And, yeah, they might be able to go back and receive training, basic training aid from the university campuses while they're working out in their gyms. But all in all, I mean, the health insurance is a significant hurdle. And that's something that I think we should all push for, not just as former players, but I think for the current group of players, that'd be a really, really special thing, I think, to get movement on, to get some traction on.
We're talking to Greg McElroy, ESPN, the SEC Network, former Alabama quarterback as well. So one thing, Greg, that we've discussed is how because the virus has forced scheduling changes and forced policy changes in all these sports, that some of these things that get put in place for now could stay. And so what I mean by that is we've seen these conferences, SEC being one of them, go to the conference only model. At least that's the plan for this year. And so how much do you think that actually stays intact, or do you think we're going to see more SEC games moving forward and less out of conference games? And how do you feel about that? Do you think that sticks around?
I hope so. I think once the fans get a taste of what it's like to have a great game every week, it's going to be hard to get away from. I don't know if it'll happen immediately, but I feel like in the near future, we're going to see Power 5 against Power 5 games. Now, whether that be in conference or whether that be against Power 5 out-of-conference foes, we've already seen a lot of home-and-home scheduling that a lot of these schools have started to do because, let's be honest, even in the SEC where the fandom and the pageantry is unrivaled, there's been a drop in gate attendance all over the league, and that's concerning. So you have to make your game day environment better. And people aren't just going to go because the television viewing experience is so incredibly good. So now you have to incentivize people getting to the stadium by putting forth an incredible product. And the best product you're going to have is Power 5 against Power 5 games. So with all due respect to the smaller schools, the Group of Five, I think there's a real possibility, and I've been saying this for years, that in the next 5 to 10 years, they're completely obsolete and the Power 5 breaks away almost completely. Does that mean they'll do so with the Group of 65 that currently construct the Power 5? Probably not. They'll probably have some teams like Cincinnati, like UCF, like BYU. I would imagine those schools will get a real good long, hard look, knowing the footprint that they occupy as far as television households are concerned. But I think it's only a matter of time. The Power 5 now recognizes, and especially if the fans get a taste of it, there's a real push from fans to continue to move in this direction, then you expand the playoff field, and then you have a couple losses, and it's not going to completely break your back for the season. I think we're heading in that direction, and I didn't think that coronavirus would accelerate as much as it has, but I think as soon as the fans get a taste of some of these schedules, assuming we play the 10 games against quality Power 5 opponents, then that's going to be a difficult thing to turn their back on in the years to come.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I see it going that way, too. I went to Middle Tennessee State University, so I went to one of those smaller Group of Five schools. And it, you know, I went to games, but a lot of times I'd go to see my friends in Knoxville, or I went to a few games at Alabama, Vanderbilt in Nashville, of course. I'd go see SEC football. And I think a lot of students, a lot of fans are doing that, even though they might go to a Group of Five. That said, I don't want to see my alma mater lose their football program. So what do you think the balance would be of the Group of Five or the Power Five breaking off, but the Group of Five still having some relevance in college football?
Well, give them first of all, a cut of the revenue, and then give the Group of Five their own playoff. I mean, I don't know about you guys, scattered throughout December Saturdays and Fridays and Friday nights, I'm watching the James Madisons of the world. I'm watching North Dakota State. Because I'm starred for football, and those games matter. Those playoff games are amazing. I've watched the FCS championship on several different occasions. Well, what if you have a Group of Five championship and the quality of play is even that much better? So I think that it's only a matter of time that, yeah, I mean, there's still a way for those schools to be absolutely relevant. But when you're talking about being relevant in an apples-to-apples comparison against the likes of the SEC or the Big Ten, it's just not likely. It's not possible. It's just sheer size, tradition, regional fandom, what have you, and the quality of play. So it's not to knock the smaller schools. There's still a place for them, and they will continue, I think, to have opportunities to play against the Power Five. But I think the FCS, that's where I draw the line first and foremost. There are several FBS teams that are capable in a Group of Five setting of beating a Power Five team. Not as many in the FCS. There's a few. And we've seen it happen, but not as many. So I would expect those games to go away first. I could see the Middle Tennessees of the world still having some relevance because of their regional proximity to Power Five schools. But I think down the road, they're going to probably have to figure out a new way of doing things. And I do think, too, I mean, this spring football, we get a taste of spring football this year with the FCS. If everyone moves to the spring, maybe the FCS goes there permanently. And that wouldn't shock me whatsoever. It would allow them to benefit more from their television deal. I just did the XFL. Was a part of the broadcast crew for ABC throughout the first 5 weeks of the season. Now, the appetite isn't insanely strong, but there still is, in fact, an appetite for spring football. So I think more and more people are going to recognize that you have to be a little more creative, especially at the smaller level, because the Power Five is about to get real selfish, I think, in the years to come, especially if things are really bad financially this year. they're going to have to get really selfish really quick for self-preservation. So it'll be curious to see exactly what they decide and how the group of five decides to counterpunch back.
You brought up the XFL, and I was going to ask you about that with the Rock and his investment group, Dwayne Johnson, buying it, trying to keep it going. And I know that it maybe wasn't making a ton of money, but it was entertaining. I watched it. I thought you guys did a great job with it. The coronavirus pandemic obviously ended the season early, but do you think that with The Rock involved, does it have a chance at least at another season?
A couple things here. First, I think without a shadow of a doubt, there's a place for it. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, because there is an appetite for football. Now, people will point to the declining ratings in the XFL. Fair enough, but you're still averaging 1.5 million viewers a game, and that's pretty dang impressive for a startup league with limited name recognition. So you take into account, well, there's more and more guys that are not really all that interested in playing college ball. Maybe the XFL becomes a developmental league. For those guys that aren't really feeling the college atmosphere, maybe they go play in the XFL. And I think that's a real possibility in the years to come. Plus, I mean, you think about just the fact that the XFL embraced gambling and how we were kind of on the cutting edge of a few different things that are going to kind of push the sport forward a little bit. I think there's definitely a place for it. And I think if the television networks really were going to look at it, the XFL game, the average XFL game, had more viewers than an NBA game. And there's something to take into account for that. And the NBA product, granted, there is a ton of inventory because of how many teams and how many games they play in the regular season. But if they're getting paid billions upon billions upon billions of dollars a year for their television rights, tell me someone won't pay a few hundred million for the XFL. I think they will. So I thought it was, I mean, what did The Rock have to lose by taking, you know, 5% of what he makes annually, investing it in a league, and who knows, maybe in a couple of years he sells the television rights for a couple hundred million dollars. And I think it's a real possibility. And if done the right way, which I do think the XFL was doing it, if done the right way, and we don't have one of the biggest hurdles we've ever seen in professional sports world, then I think it would have been sustainable. And I'm disappointed that it happened the way it did, but I hope, I'm very optimistic that someday, if it comes back and we implement the same strategies we did the last time, I think it's got a chance to continue to have success.
Wouldn't it be nice just to pull $15 million out of a jar in a spare bedroom like The Rock did and buy a league? That would be so cool.
That's his creatine budget a year, you know. So I mean, there's no telling exactly what he has stashed away on a rainy day. But he ain't hurting for fun, that's for sure. And
no.
Believe me, if I had it, the XFL would definitely be something I'd consider.
Greg, we always enjoy the visit. Thanks so much for doing this. You continue to be safe, and we look forward to talking to you down the road.
Hey, y'all did the same. Great talking to y'all.
All right, thank you. That is Greg McElroy, ESPN and SEC Network, and we do appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. More on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Good stuff from Greg McElroy. Appreciate him joining the show here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Don't forget Pierre McGuire coming up at high noon. Predators pregame at 12:30. Puck drop at 1:30. Game 2, Preds and Coyotes. Right now, Islanders and Panthers. New York trying to jump out to a 2-0 series lead in that contest. And right now they are through about 7 minutes in the first period. The Islanders, What happened? We get a little high stick?
Yeah.
A little double minor?
It looks like a double minor. I don't know if it was a major or a double minor, because I looked up at just like you did and saw 3:45 on the clock. So
Islanders on a long power play. By the way, I saw last night in the – which game was it? Maybe it was the
night double
game.
Minor.
It was a double minor?
Brock Nelson in the box.
Which game was it? Either the Pittsburgh-Montreal game or the Edmonton-Chicago game. I think it was the Edmonton-Chicago game. I don't know if you saw this. They called a four-minute high-stick double minor, and they went and looked at it. It was the Edmonton game. And they went and looked at it, and it was friendly fire. It was his own player's stick, and they came back and reversed it, which I thought was interesting.
I don't think I've seen that before.
Yeah, I know. That's why I brought it up.
But I'm glad they did that.
The only thing you can't do, and they were explaining this last night, because it's such rare to see that, right? You go check and review that and then come back. So look like a four-minute power play coming up for Edmonton just completely wiped out. But the only thing you can't do is you can't change it to just a two-minute. You just can't change it, right, to a minor penalty. That's it. So you can't do that. You can't go look at it and go, oh, it's not a double minor. It's just a minor. They can't do that, but they can erase it.
Well, I've always just thought that the rule of thumb is if there's blood, it's automatically a double minor.
And there was blood. It was very clear. The minute it happened, I mean, he skates off the ice and there's blood everywhere.
I remember.
It was on the nose. So, I mean, there was nothing to question. But I'm just saying, you're right. That's kind of the way we always – right, if there's blood, it's going to be a double minor, right, or major. And so I don't know why you could just knock it down to just a minor.
Yeah.
Because typically it takes something like that to call it more than just a minor. But anyway, that's the rules. So you can look at it, which I learned something last night. I was like, huh. Because the minute they showed the replay, I was like, wow, this is getting reversed. I mean, it was very clear that it was not Chicago's stick, that was friendly fire, and he got popped by his own teammate's stick. And sure enough, didn't take long. They came back and said the play's been reversed.
I was at a Preds game one time, and sitting in the stands, and they were playing Chicago, and I was next to a Chicago fan, and I forgot who it was for Nashville that got hit in the face, high stick. They called it, and he went down, and they called a double minor. And the guy next to me is just cussing and like, that's not a double minor. That's not, there's no blood. And the player stood up and there's just a puddle right on the ice. And I looked at him and said, you sure? Sure about that? No blood? It hit him in the nose.
When we were talking to Greg McElroy, I saw this tweet during that conversation and it's pretty interesting. So Jim Harbaugh, you know, he gets a lot of attention, right? I mean,
yep.
I don't know how you feel,
it's
but
his pants.
I think John is the way better coach. Do you feel that way?
Yes.
Or do you think I think his brother John, who doesn't get anywhere near the attention Jim does, I think John is the way better coach, in my opinion. That's just me.
Yeah,
do you agree with that?
Yeah, he's got more skins on the wall. He won a Super Bowl and his team since he's been the head coach, and I mean, he's been there for a long time now. I guess Belichick's the longest tenured in the league, but I would think John Harbaugh is
got to be next.
Got yeah, close. So he's been there for
how
a very
long
time.
How long's Peyton been in New Orleans?
2007 or 8? Because they won
2009, they won the Super Bowl. He was the coach.
It was 2006, I think, was his first year.
Yeah,
so it's been about 14 years.
Right after Katrina.
Peyton would be behind Belichick.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, 2006. And then John Harbaugh was probably, what, 2008? Somewhere.
He's been there probably.
2008, yep.
Yeah, 10 years. I was going to say at least a decade.
Yep. So.
So I was looking at Jim Harbaugh. So they posted Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. This is just since he's been at Michigan. Okay?
Okay.
He has played 41 unranked teams. 41 unranked teams. So what's his record against unranked teams?
41 unranked teams. I would say it's pretty good because I think I know where you're going with this. So I'll go 37-4.
That is correct. On the button.
Really?
Yep.
I promise you I didn't look.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's you know where this narrative is going, right?
Right.
I mean, this is the whole point about Jim Harbaugh. That's not – you don't get that kind of attention. You don't pay a guy like that to beat unranked teams, right? That at Michigan, that goes without saying. You pay them to win bowl games, to beat Ohio State, to win conference championships, you know, to have them in the mix for playoffs, all that good stuff. You don't pay them to big bucks to beat unranked teams. By the way, Hoffman goal for the Panthers, 1-0, 8.5 minutes in, or 8.5 minutes left in the first period. So he's 37-4 against unranked teams. Okay, here's the big one. How about top 25 teams? He has played 24, he has coached against 24 top 25 teams. What's his record?
Coaching against 24, I will say.
There's been 24 games against top 25 teams. That's the best way to put it.
I think it's below 500, so I'll say 10 and 14.
And you didn't look at this.
Nope.
10 and 14.
Are you serious?
You're on a roll. 10 and 14.
Wow.
Okay. So he's played.
I need a lottery ticket today.
Yeah, no kidding. He's coached against Ohio State 5 times since he's been the coach at Michigan. What's his record? This is easy. Come on. This is easy. You don't need to think about this.
0-5.
Yeah, he's 0-5. He hasn't beaten the Buckeyes yet. He's been in 5 bowl games. What's his record in bowl games?
2-3.
1-4.
Okay.
You see the theme. And then
August, he didn't win the big games.
August through October, he's 33-7. November through January, he's 14-11. So as the games get bigger, the stage gets bigger, and things get tighter, they seem to shrink a bit. Early on, you play in the cupcake, you know, the out-of-conference games, you're padding that record, and then you got some bad in-conference teams, you pad that record. But the bottom line is, when you're the head coach at Michigan, you're paid to beat Ohio State. You're paid to win bowl games. You're paid to win the conference. You're paid to be in a playoff race year in and year out. That's why you pay the big bucks at Michigan. And obviously none of that's happening. Now, have they been relevant? Yeah, they've been relevant, of course. They're relevant. They get lots of discussion. They're in the picture. But when it's time to finish things off and knock down the door, they're not doing that. So I do wonder, like, where this is going with Jim Harbaugh. Like, how long is the leash? Because you're right. As much as people throw that stuff out there, whether you write an article or people on national platforms are saying, this has got to be it for Jim Harbaugh. If he doesn't do it, or else he's on a hot seat or what have you. That narrative, when that gets out there, it seems like Michigan's pretty quick to counter with, yeah, he's not on any hot seat.
Right. And so this is a question for you then. And to me, it's pretty apparent when you can look at a program and you go, okay, they actually give a damn about winning and winning championships. Their biggest rivalry, Ohio State, win at all cost. I mean, the Urban Meyer watch. We know the things that happen under Urban Meyer. They win at all costs. They care about winning. That's what they want to do. Michigan, they just like having the spotlight on them. And Harbaugh does a good – Jim Harbaugh does a good job at that, gets spotlight on him. But if they keep saying that he's not on the hot seat, then – and I'm not saying that it's because they don't care about winning, but it's like it's just – let's just stay relevant. That's the attitude that comes across, at least.
Yeah. Well, if it's just stay relevant, then his mission has been accomplished because they've been relevant. But I don't think that's the mission, is to be relevant.
No, but when's the last time they won a national championship? How long has it been? Because I don't know if it's – has it been in my lifetime? '97.
Yeah, it has been.
But that's the only one. And it was 1948 before that. Now they have some unclaimed national titles in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But, you know, claimed official national titles, 97's the last one, and then it was 1948 before that. So, obviously it was silly back then. They didn't have the BCS or the playoff. But, I mean, So apparently they're okay with it. They're just like, hey, we'll be relevant. We're Michigan. We don't need championships to back that up. We don't need to beat Ohio State. We'll just be relevant. We'll make khaki commercials.
Yeah. Don't forget, game two is today, and if you're looking for a place to watch it, we've got a couple party viewing destinations, Burger Republic and Party Foul. And I'll tell you what, these are two good destinations to watch the Predators game today, have a drink, have a good meal. Stop by Burger Republic. There's one in Lenox Village or in Mount Juliet. You can enjoy a Fours Burger for a limited time, plus $4 Happ and Harry pints. Party Foul locations are Cool Springs Galleria, Murfreesboro, in Murfreesboro off Broad Street, in Donaldson off Lebanon Pike, and downtown in the Gulch. Today at Party Foul, it's also a special all-day happy hour. All-day happy hour at Party Foul. Wear your gold and bring the noise and root in from the Predators to even up the series at 1. Puck drop is at 1:30. This will be your home, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Party Foul and Burger Republic will be following social distancing guidelines while you watch the game today. Also, today at, we will be at Party Foul in Donaldson. That's the one on Lebanon Pike. From noon until the end of the game, pick up some game and Predator swag there at Party Foul in Donaldson on Lebanon Pike. We will come back. There's news on Nick Schmaltz. We talked to Craig Morgan at 10:15. In the first hour, he was out for game one. Will he be in or will he be out in game two? Pierre McGuire coming up at high noon, pregame at 12:30. More of Darren Dunnick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Islanders on another power play, and they ring it off the post. Bobrovsky, big sigh of relief. Florida Panthers get a goal from Mike Hoffman, and they lead the Islanders 1-0 with about 3 minutes to go in the first. Predators and Coyotes game two is today, and we talked with Craig Morgan back in the first hour and asked him about Nick Schmaltz, who got hurt. He got hit by Reeves in their showcase game against Vegas. He did not play in game one, and we do have word. Craig Morgan has tweeted out that Nick Schmaltz is
out. No lineup changes expected, which means he's out.
He is out. And if you look at what they did, I guess Hayton was the guy who replaced him, centering that second line. That second line was Grabner, Garland, and Hayton in the middle, which would have been Schmaltz. Dvorak, if nothing changes, that first line will be Dvorak centering that top line with Kessel on the right side, Hall on the left. Derek Steppen centering that third line with Keller and Krause. And then Richardson centering that fourth line with Fisher and Soderberg on either side. Ekman Larson and Demers as that top D pairing. Goligoski and Chychrun at second D pairing, and Osterley and Jamerson as the third. If nothing changes, that was the lineup they went with, and right. I guess Darcy Kuemper back in net for the Coyotes, if indeed that's the way it shakes out. And Craig Morgan knows because he's been covering him for a long time and does a fantastic job. So he's saying that Rick Tocchet is going to just basically roll with the winning lineup from game one.
That's what it looks like. That's what it looks like. What do you think about the Preds? Do you think they go with the same lineup? Not talking about goaltender, but do you think there are any changes?
That is the question. I don't believe there will be a goalie change.
I don't either.
I know that the third D pairing was Tenorti and Yannick Weber. Maybe they go with Dan Hamhuis. I don't know. Maybe they give him a shot.
Traditionally, I think
especially in a short series, you lose, right? You're probably going to make some type of an adjustment. So maybe you see Dan Hamhuis instead of Yannick Weber with Tenorti. I don't think they're going to change out Tenorti. I don't think. They use him a lot on the penalty kill.
Yep. I think Hamhuis is in. I think he replaces one of them.
So you think Ham Hughes is in for Weber.
Yep.
And what about Austin Watson was with Sissons and Yarncroke on that fourth line? Is this where they put in a Colin Blackwell or a Trennan?
I think Colin Blackwell is in.
That's kind of what I think, too. Because I think it's going to be Blackwell and Ham Hughes as the two adjustments from game one.
If you look at the score sheet and look at the time on ice, Austin Watson had just over 6 minutes, but the number that really stood out was he had less than a minute on the penalty kill. And if he's not getting penalty kill time, yeah, then what's, you know, that's kind of his role. So
yeah,
I think they go with the younger option and a guy that has played well for them this year. Now, Ryan and I talked about this last night. We both would love to see Yakov Trennan at some point.
And by the way, Austin Watson just played 6 minutes in that
yeah,
game.
Yeah.
So I mean, he just barely wasn't played. So I you know, that's another thing. That's another factor. If you're only gonna play him 6 minutes, then to me, I could see definitely a change coming.
Yeah, I think that those are gonna be the changes that Ham Hughes is in, and I believe I'm with you. I believe it'll be for Weber and not for Tenorti. Tenorti did not have a very good game, but I believe this was a situation where John Hines is going to go, okay, got to work out of it. He played well during the regular season, especially, you know, when John Hines got in here. So I think that Tenorti stays in. You go Ham Hughes, get some experience, even though Yannick Weber certainly has experience too, but get even more experience with Dan Ham Hughes and then Colin Blackwell, because I think he's just been more effective this year. It's unfortunate they gave Austin Watson on, what was it, Halloween. He got that contract extension where David Poile pulled one on me, and I could have broken a story when we were in the media room. But you remember that?
I remember it well. Yes, I do.
And so Watson gets that contract extension, but it just hasn't. This hasn't been his year. So
I think we're in agreements on what changes, what minor adjustments John Hines will make in today's lineup. Of course, we're just going on our observations. We're not there. Have no idea. Nothing's been put out there. It seems like, one, they're very comfortable with Colin Blackwell, and they like him. And maybe they need a little bit more energy. And so I think Colin Blackwell is pretty safe assumption. I didn't think Yannick Weber particularly played poorly. I just think, you know, maybe they give Dan Ham Hughes a shot. It's very
potentially
clear.
Holzer, but I think Ham Hughes.
I think Ham Hughes will get the first crack, first guy in.
Yeah, and I don't think they change. You know, that was another thing we talked about. I don't think they change the pairing altogether. Change both guys. I think it's just one or the other. They could, but I just believe they swap Ham Hughes in for somebody.
They're going to have to get more production out of that second line. And the second line was actually looking really good in those inter-squad scrimmages that we were at Bridgestone Arena of Matt Duchesne and Granlund and Turris. They're going to have to get more production out of them. They're going to have to be they're just going to have to get more out of them. I mean, we talk about top six all the time. I thought the first line was pretty good. I know Forsberg had a couple of goals, but they were power play goals. You know, honestly, they need more out of the top line, too. I mean, you saw exactly what happened. Whenever you get down, you need your high-priced talent. You need your guys on those top lines to step up. And that's what happened in Pittsburgh last night. Crosby was flying around. Malkin was flying around. Pittsburgh evens up the series. And then, you know, it was very clear. In fact, I think Connor McDavid only had 3 shots, and he had a hat trick. And he had 2 goals in the first 5 minutes. So you need your stars to shine, right? That's why you pay them the big bucks. That's why they have the big contracts. And so they'll need even more production out of that first line. But more importantly, for them to be successful today and in this series, they're going to have to get more out of that second line.
Yeah.
Honestly, the thing that stood out to me, Chase, on the second line in game one was bad stuff, bad penalties.
Yep.
Like, I just thought Duchesne and Granlund's, the 2 penalties those guys took, I just thought you just cannot have those. Granlund, that gets called. You jerk somebody, pull them back from behind the net. That call is going to happen 10 out of 10 times. And what Duchesne did, is going to get called 10 out of 10 times. I mean, it's just – that's just gonna, you can't have that. Obviously, we know the penalties were a big issue. They're going to have to cut down on the penalties. You can't get behind and kill off penalties, right? That's a bad combo, trying to play catch-up and kill off penalties. That's a bad combination. So the second line is going to have to play a lot better if they're going to have success.
Yeah, and a couple points on that. You brought up the first line, and I agree there's always going to be room for improvement, but they were the most productive line of anyone in game one, and I think some of the trepidation of putting those three back together has been that, you know, they're looked at as, okay, that's the work line, they're going to go and get it done, and then you just get nothing out of everyone else, and that's a problem. Matt Duchene was sought after for two seasons, and we rumor after rumor, Duchene to Nashville. He wants to be in Nashville. It finally happens. They pay him a lot of money, and there simply has to be more. There just has to be. You're paying that guy a lot of money to be either a second-line center or a first-line center. I mean, it's interchangeable, or at least it's supposed to be, and he can't take dumb penalties like that. The production has to go up. And so they are simply asking him to do more, and he needs to do more. And then, you know, Kyle Turris is what we saw when John Hines came in. Clearly that was a reset for him, but you got to have more out of him if he's going to be on that second line. And then Granlund too. So I hope that it's one game, and you see it today, that those three, in whatever combination they use, if they put Duchene at center and Turris on the wing, we've seen both. We've seen them change it up, but whatever they do, they are going to have to add more to this team for them to get the win today. I mean, they just have to. It can't all be on the top line or the Jofa line.
Yeah. I think they're going to respond today, personally.
I do, too.
I think they'll come out and they'll take care of business, and I think they're going to even it up. I do.
Yeah, I do, too. I put it on Twitter, 3-1. I think is what happens today. I think they get the 3-1 win, and we'll see what happens tomorrow. It's the discussion we had yesterday. I believe that if Saros just doesn't get peppered and a ton of work, he's back at it tomorrow. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that you make the change to Rene just because it's a back-to-back, given the circumstances that they'd have 24 hours. They walk across the street. They're at the hotel. There's no travel involved. So I do believe that if it's a solid outing for Saros, you go back to him tomorrow. But I agree. I think they respond. I believe they even this series up. And in some ways, you know, if they go out and play a game like we know they're capable of playing, they can take control of the series, even though it would be tied 1-1. So they can right some wrongs very easily by just going out and playing the game that they need to play today.
You want a little people like to dabble, people listening, like do a little dabbling. You want to hear a trend that we've seen early on in these qualifying rounds,
yes,
and even the round robin?
Yes, I like
these
trends.
Games are going under.
Yep.
Under, under, under. In fact, Edmonton, Chicago both have been the over. You had the Stars, Vegas last night go over, and that's because of a crazy third period. Vegas had 4 goals in the third period. And the Predators-Coyotes game, and that is it. All the other games have been the under.
Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah,
is typically
that.
5.5. 5.5, 6, but most of them are 5.5. In other words, that's the combined score. Most of these games have all gone 5 or less. Well, they all have. I just gave you the overs. Both games with Edmonton, Chicago, the Predators, Coyotes, which should have been a shoe-in under game, right, because of the defense. And you would think that would have been a shoe-in under. Predators, Coyotes, the Dallas-Vegas game last night, and the 2 Edmonton-Chicago games, and that's it. All the games have been the under.
So what do you think it is today for the Preds? I got it pulled
under,
up.
Without a doubt.
So
there's my hot tip for you.
So you say take the under.
Under and the Predators is the play today.
Okay, so under is plus 110. Under is plus 110, so you can make a little there.
Well, what is that? What is it at? Is it at 5.5 or 6?
It's at 5.
5. Okay, so it's
according
gone
to my bookie.
Yeah, it's gone way down.
The Predators
typically they're 5.5.
Right, and I'm going to check some other books and see what.
But they're probably adjusting because of all the unders.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. And then according to I'm looking at my bookie right now, the Predators are a -145 favorite. +125 for the Coyotes. Now, one interesting note on the series, the prices for the actual series, because Arizona took a 1-0 lead, they are now a -160 favorite, +135 for the Predators for the series. So they're looking at that 82% from 1986 as well. That's what it sounds like.
Interesting. Minnesota Golden Gophers wide receiver Rashad Bateman has told PJ Fleck and the team that he is opting out for this season, and he will forego his remaining 2 years of eligibility and enter the draft. He is a projected first-round pick, and also there will be no fans at the 104th running of the Indianapolis 500. No fans.
Saw that. BetMGM has the Preds as a -139 favorite, under 5, +115.
There you go, the hot tip today. Preds get it done. They take game 2 and take the under. That's free. And go pay off a couple bills with that stuff, that free info.
Just I like
telling
it.
You. Yep. And if it loses, lose my number in my info. We'll come back. We'll start the third hour with Pierre McGuire. We'll talk some hockey with him. He is in Edmonton, that hub city, in between the benches. We'll do that. Pre-game at 12:30, puck drop at 1:30. Everything is heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big.